Mary Joy, thank you so much. Hi, everyone. Linda, I am a compulsive overeater, and boy, am I grateful to be here. I thought I would start more for me than for you, with a few deep breaths. So if you'd like to join me, I'm going to take a deep breath in and breathe in and breathe out ego. And then I'm going to breathe in love. And breathe out fear. And then I'm going to breathe in curiosity and breathe out uncertainty. Those were just the things that I felt that I needed for myself this morning. And I know that when I do that in my doctor's office or wherever I'm stressed, I can feel myself settle. So I am a compulsive overeater. I'm so grateful to be here. And thank you, Judy, for asking me to share. And so what I want to do is just, I consider myself a garden variety compulsive overeater. I want to share for just a couple of minutes on what that means or what my life was like, but focus really on the recovery aspects. I've been in the program 16 years. I'm maintaining about a 35-pound weight loss. My food history is one of secret and stealing and hiding food, taking food that didn't belong to me, because my self-image and my self-worth was wrapped around how much food I got that other people didn't get. Earliest memories are I always knew that I had an abnormal relationship with food. When I would be selling food for fundraisers, and knew that if I was fine doing it, and this was young, 10, 12, 14, as long as I didn't eat any, which invariably happened. And I ended up paying for most of the food that I was supposed to be selling. I will tell you that my disease progressed from one, what I remember as kind of a young adult is using food to just take the edge off. And over time, that really progressed to eating at people. So if I was resentful of you or mad or angry at you, my strategy was to, I'll feel better. I'll just eat this, and I'll be controlling you in some way. I can control this and crazy. And then, as I look back, right before I found OA, or I should say, OA found me, I was eating for oblivion. There's no doubt. I was eating because I wanted to just do a hard shutdown of the system. I was too overwhelmed, too stressed, couldn't cope, no copings, didn't have coping skills. And food was the solution to that. Food was how I found, took me years to understand that that was ease and comfort, to escape and shut down. The good news is OA found me. And I have never left. And that's one of the very first things I heard in this program as a newcomer. So if you're new, just please keep coming back. Never leave the meetings. Whatever's going on in your life, whatever your relationship is with food, the solution, at least the solution for me, has always been here. So what I'd really like to do is tell you, so what have I been doing over the last year or so that since the last time I checked in with all of you? And it is really exploring the idea of sitting with discomfort, of sitting with things that food used to solve my need to sit with discomfort because, the food was right there. But now it's even more than doing a 10 step on something, doing a spot check. It is sitting with dis-ease. And the goal of that, and I have to credit my sponsor with this, is that she has got me trying to understand the triggers. So what are the triggers? What are my reactions with help from clarity and my higher power? What's the underlying emotional causes of these things? And it has been a journey. It has been a very positive journey. So there's this favorite quote, well, famous, but favorite quote from Thich Nhat Hanh that says, "Don't just do something, sit there. Don't just do something, sit there." And that has been the theme. So what I want to do is tell you, I guess, give a couple of two or three illustrations of my character defects and how don't just do something, sit there has really helped me. The first is economic insecurity. For decades, I have had this fear of economic insecurity, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Well, this one has been like on sloth track. And I considered myself miserly. Like I'm a nickel and dimer. My husband wants to buy something. I'm like, well, how much did that cost? And did you get quotes? And did you shop around? And, tortured this poor man. And over the last year, it has gotten much better. And the gist of it is we have enough. We have enough. But my brain says there's never enough time, money, or love. Ding, 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 never enough money. So my sponsor had me write, what is going on with this fear of financial insecurity? And cutting to the chase, I'm writing, I'm doing two-way prayer, which I've been doing for 3 or 4 years, which has been a game changer in my program for insights. And I was reading one to my sponsor, and the word discarded came up. I have a fear of being discarded. And she's like, ooh, let's talk about that word. So she sent me back to do some more work on that. And what it came, here's the bottom line for me. What popped up over, a few weeks of writing was when I was younger, I saw a TV segment on elder abuse. And we have no children. My husband and I have no kids. And somewhere in my brain, it did the math and it said, if you don't have enough money, you're going to end up alone in a nursing home, and you're going to be the victim of elder abuse. And oh my God, the day that I realized that that was driving all of my economic insecurity, my sponsor's like, good work, good job. So understanding something, these triggers, even if I don't even consciously understand them, has been very, very helpful. So fast forward to February of this year, and we were away and we were staying in a, I don't know, 400 square foot, one bedroom, one bath, refrigerator hot plate kind of place, microwave hot plate. It had two seats out in front of it, these little cottages. There were like 15 of them. We were one of the 15. And about 3 or 4 days into this trip, honest to gosh, my higher power said to me, Linda, you're happy. I thought, wow, I am so happy here. I mean, we had practically nothing with us. And I thought, this joy of being here with my spouse, with the dog, had to find a dog place, a place that took dogs. It's enough. This would be enough. If this is what you end up with, this is enough. And I don't know. It's been a game changer. Oh, the septic tank's out. That's another 16,000. Oh, got to pay for it. No, none of that crazy. None of that crazy. So, I want to, so I huge, huge progress on economic insecurity. The other one I want to illustrate is this idea of selfishness, self-centered, and controlling. So, a couple shares ago on this meeting, a couple years ago when I did this speaker share, I talked about how I was able to finally tell my parents that I loved them. And I talk a little bit about how I did that. And that has been an incredible gift for me. Well, here I am now, still elderly parents, an 83-year-old mom with early stage vascular dementia, and a father, 90-year-old father who's got mobility issues and is struggling. And forgive me, I'm a little, this is where I live, bow obsessed, right? Bow obsessed. So I was there for Father's Day, came back yesterday, and I get a text from my mom yesterday afternoon that he's back in the ER. And he's in the ER once a month, every 4 or 5 weeks, we're in back to the ER. So sponsor's like, all right, what's going on with this? So I want, here's the bottom line. It's all about me. I want them safe. I want them tucked away in a nursing home slash assisted living center. They live alone. You don't know this. They live alone. They have each other, right? The house I grew up in, stairs. My mother still drives. Last year it was insanity, but this year I'm so much better. But I don't want the uncertain to live with the uncertainty of worrying about them. So if they were all safe and sound in a nursing, my life would be so much better. And so what sponsor's like, yeah, do some work. So here's the thing. I'm sitting there or standing there at the kitchen sink with my mother last year, late last year, and got it. Ten, thanks, John. And sit standing there with her, and she's asking me again, you know, when are you leaving? Did you feed the dog? 2 minutes later, did you feed the dog? I'm like, okay. Honest to gosh, I wanted to say, Mom, every 2 minutes you ask me, you know, we're looking out the window and she's asking me these questions, and I wanted to be snappy. And my higher power stepped into that moment and I paused and he said, Linda, your mother has a disease. Your mother has a disease. She doesn't know that she doesn't know. And the amount of compassion that showed up in my heart that moment for the for someone who I love was overwhelming. And I have been a much kinder, gentler person with both of my parents. And the fact that my dad is back in the emergency room again, you know, here's the deal. They have my higher power, God, they have their own higher powers. My job is to stay in this day, love them, and treat them with as much care as I can. So I want to, in the time that I have left, and that's a gift, 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 gift. In the time that I have left, I want to tell you that there is a lot of life. Everyone has a lot of life going on. So there's a lot of program working in my life. And I'm very grateful because honestly, I don't know how people get through program without life. I mean, get through life without program. And I guess work their program with life. So the practices, you know, everything that I'm working on right now is to get to understand myself better. And it is a gentle effort because, you know, I don't know where I was the first 14 and a half years, but I don't think I was very gentle. So the things that are going on, I have to believe that everything that happens to me is really something that is there to teach me about myself. It happens for me. Got to shift that thinking. If I expect, here's the deal for me. If I expect, I need to expect that my life is going to have these challenges, that I am going to have anger, fear, resentment, worry, self-pity. And it is not that I am not working my program hard enough. That is not it. The deal is that these emotions show up because I'm alive, awake, and aware in this world. And they are opportunities to be grateful for everything that I experience. Because again, it moves my needle forward to what, you know, new thoughts, new ideas, new understandings. So I want to be grateful for every opportunity that I have to practice this program, the steps, everything. I need to let go of how much I used to get done. So I have a friend who's in program, and she said, as we age, we don't get as much shit done as we used to. She's colorful, right? She's colorful. She has a way of getting into my brain, and she's right. There is only so much time, energy, and in my day. And I actively want to do more things. Like I have this activity addiction that goes on, and I'm getting help through a 12-step program for workaholics that is helping me with that. However, what I do in this program in my 12 steps and with my higher power's help is I sit with my to-do list and I say to my higher power, all right, what's the most important thing I have to get done today? Huge help. And I get those things done. The most important stuff gets done, and I let go of what doesn't get done. My phone, I guess I'm talking to it, so I can't hold it up and say, my phone, the great distraction device. I'm working really hard. I don't pick it up now before I finish my daily spiritual practice, and I don't take it into the bedroom with me at night. It charges over there in the family room. Game changer for me. Because here's the thing, if I can say nothing else that I'm really working on, is by doing this inside work and understanding better the triggers and doing two-way prayer. When I get close to the spiritual truth of what is really underlying the cause of my feelings, my face gets red and I feel adrenalized, like I can feel it in my body. And the very first thing I want to do, and I reach for the phone because it is uncomfortable. And I think to myself, oh, I wonder blah 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 is going on. I wonder what that word means. Something to distract myself from experiencing and having this moment. So I pick up the phone, and so right now I'm like, no phone. You get to sit with this discomfort because that is where, for me, the insights are coming from. And I want to end with something my sponsor, this generic thing my sponsor says. Okay, her thing is, Linda, we learn best by trying, right? And she says, what do you want to do? Fill in the blank. What do you want to do? Do you want to? And my job is to say, do you want to do your nightly review every night? That's my thing. Do you want to do blank? For me, it's, do you want to do your nightly review every night or not? And she says, well, what's in the way? What's in the way? And I need to say, okay, well, I get tired. I spend an hour with my husband watching TV, and then I get tired and I'm just exhausted. Maybe I did a little too much, whatever, too much. So, Linda, what can you do differently? And I'm like, I come up with these things. Well, when I sit down for meals, I could do an inventory for what was going on between breakfast and lunch. And at dinner, I could say lunch to dinner. What can you do differently? And then she says, well, you could experiment. She's a big believer in experimentation. You could experiment. Try doing something different for a week or 2 weeks, or maybe it's a month. And then get the data. And review the data and see what works and reinforce what's working well. And it's those types of that willingness that I have come to try things that I might not otherwise have done. So I guess, John, that when that goes off, it's got 1 minute left, right? Or 3 minutes left. Oh, excellent. All righty. So I want to end with a reading that was so helpful to me, and it was just I guess a couple of days ago from For Today. And it's June 23rd. And it's just part of this reading. It says, I used to think the only way to tackle major projects was in great bursts of concentrated effort, like a child with a short attention span. I would tire myself out with the intensity of sporadic effort and then go on to something else. Today, I still tend to see a difficult task in terms of the total time and effort it will take. But there is one lesson. Thank you, John. There is one lesson I have learned well. The only time I have to abstain and practice the program of recovery is today. For today, it is this day's abstinence that guarantees me continued sanity and freedom, nothing else. So this idea of living in the now, and if I want to dip into the future or reflect on the past, that's okay, but I can't live there. The only time we have is now. The only time, I've got to make a change, to tell my parents I love them, to make a phone call, to decide to experiment with something that is going to move my program forward, pick up a step is now. So, and the very last thing is, I don't know what I was doing for the first 14 or 15 years, but I didn't see this program as gentle. I didn't exactly see it as harsh, but I didn't see it as gentle and kind and self-compassionate and loving. And over the last year or two, that is really what has shown up, that it is such a gentle and kind program. And I don't have to race and run and get stuff done right away and be at a certain point because I trust and have faith in a higher power that life will unfold for me. And I want to have curiosity and I don't want to have these foregone conclusions. And when they show up, I just pull them back into the now. So I'm just incredibly, incredibly grateful to all of you who make this meeting happen as I was watching you all set this up and watching all of the parts come together this morning. Before Mary Joy turned it over to me, I thought, damn, there's a lot of work that goes into this. So thank you all for your service. Thank you for keeping this meeting going. Thank you for carrying the message. And for newcomers, please, please, please keep coming back. Thank you. I pass.